Somebody that would have gotten that question correct is attorney, film critic, conservative pundit, and all-around interesting person, Debbie Schlussel. Debbie, good morning. Thanks so much for joining me on the radio.
Good morning, and thanks. Quite an introduction, but I have to be honest, I was very impressed with Chris. I would not have gotten that answer right. I knew all the other answers. That one I did not know.
Well,
but he's very impressive. Cool.
Yeah, that wasn't cool bad. That wasn't bad. All right. Debbie, how are you, by the way? You doing well?
Doing great, thank God.
Now, I want to talk movies with you because I'm eager to see this Ghostbusters movie, and I want to get your take on that. But this Rittenhouse trial, let me ask you to put on your legal analyst cap for a minute. We could see a verdict today. Any predictions on what's going to happen in this Rittenhouse trial based on what you've seen?
Well, based on what I've seen so far with the jury out this long, I really don't think they're going to make a decision. I predict that it's going to be a hung jury. The reason why I say that is, so we've now had, 3 days of deliberations on something that should be very cut and dried and easy to see was self-defense. And there's been a lot of noise that's completely irrelevant that's been brought up by the prosecutor. There have been some protests outside. And I believe that some of these jurors are afraid of riots, which there probably will be riots no matter what. But unfortunately, I think nowadays a lot of these juries are run by mob violence from the outside. So I think if they were going to make a decision one way or the other, they would have done so already. I think actually the judge should declare a mistrial or a hung jury already in a mistrial because they have yet to make a decision. They could only let the jury go for so long, and I just think that they are irreparably deadlocked.
Well, you may be right. We'll see what happens today. I can't imagine they're going to want to revisit this on Monday. So if there is a hung jury, I would imagine we're going to hear something today. It's going to be very interesting. Hey, Debbie, in spite of the fact that it's been 3 days since the jury's been out in the Rittenhouse trial, shocking everybody, at least shocking everybody in our audience, it's been, in the last 3 days, Alec Baldwin hasn't killed a single person, which comes as a surprise for a lot of people. Give me your take on this Alec Baldwin situation. As somebody that probably pays close attention to entertainment and the media and the law, what's your take on what occurred here?
I mean, I just think that anybody who is handling a gun, I'm not a gun expert, but I am a gun owner. And I know that in every gun class I've ever taken, from the very first one to the latest one, they always tell you a basic thing, which is that never point a gun at someone unless you intend to shoot and probably kill them. Number two is always look and see if there is ammunition in the gun for yourself. Don't trust anybody's word for it. And number three, even if you haven't looked, always assume that there is live ammunition. And, you know, when this first happened, I talked to a friend of mine that is a very sane Hollywood director person. And he said to me that Alec Baldwin did this on the cheap. He would have never done a lot of the things that happened in this on the set. And you always have plexiglass covering the cameras and shielding everybody else. And frankly, you know what? Alec Baldwin is the person, one of these people, just like George Clooney, who's now fighting with him over this.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. For people that don't know, George Clooney has ripped this Alec Baldwin shooting and said it's infuriating, it's insane. He said the star and the crew appeared to ignore decades-old safety rules used on every other set that George Clooney has ever been involved in. But go ahead, finish what you were going to say.
Yeah, well, so both of those guys are for gun control. They want to take away our guns while they live in gated communities and fancy penthouses. I think Alec Baldwin lives in a fancy apartment building with, you know, with a doorman and so on. Not everybody has that situation. A lot of us need to protect ourselves, and they want to take away our guns. In the one place where people should be legally allowed to have them to protect themselves under the Second Amendment. And yet one of the places where they absolutely don't need guns and they can use technology in terms of sound, computer graphics and so on, that's where they have to have the guns. So they want to take them away from you and me, but they want to have them on these sets, which they don't need them. It's absurd with today's technology that they even need them. So I think that they need to gun control Hollywood and let the rest of us do what we want to do and have our freedoms.
Now the script supervisor for this film, Rust, the one who called 911, is suing Alec Baldwin and others involved in the production. She's claiming that Alec Baldwin didn't even need to fire this gun in this scene. And she's represented by Gloria Allred, certainly somebody that can get a lot of attention for the cases that she's representing. Do you think as an attorney, Debbie, that that she has a case here? Do you think Alec Baldwin and the producers of this film are going to end up paying some money?
I think they will pay money to a lot of people, but not to this client of Gloria Allred. Gloria Allred, as you pointed out, loves publicity. She likes to make noise. But most of these cases that you hear about involving something like this, she's just piling on and trying to get publicity. I don't know how the script supervisor has any kind of standing. The only damages that she could show, which she would have to show to get anything, would be maybe some kind of harm to her reputation or some kind of payment that she didn't get. And I don't know that she could show something like that. But I do think that there is one interesting point raised, which is that she said that there's nothing in the script that involved shooting anybody. So there was no reason to practice shooting anybody or shooting the gun, which that I think is an important key point that some of the other people suing Alec Baldwin can use. And I think that Alec Baldwin's seven children are going to be fighting over very little left when he's gone, because by the time all these people are finished with him, I don't know what's going to be left. And I think the one thing he may have shot is and killed is his career.
Interesting.
In addition to Lena Hutchins.
Very interesting. But if people are listening and they see Alec Baldwin on the streets of New York, be very, very careful because, look, he's already killed at least one person. Debbie Schlossel is here. She is an attorney, a political commentator, a film critic, and we take advantage of her film opinions from time to time. Debbie, I am a big fan of the Ghostbusters franchise. The new film, Ghostbusters Afterlife, is out. You've seen it. Is it worth seeing?
Yes, I thought it was much better than I expected. I liked it a heck of a lot better than the one involving the women, which I thought was absolute garbage. The last one they had,
yeah, that was
with Melissa McCarthy.
Weak, yep.
Yeah, very weak. This was very cute. It involves these kids that are actually the grandchildren of the one actor that has died.
Right, Harold Ramis.
Exactly. So, and thank you for reminding me of his name. I had brain lock there for a second. What happens is they and their mother get evicted from their apartment, and their grandfather that they have been estranged from has died and left them his very rickety house and his farm that doesn't grow anything. And so they go out to the country to this place, and they discover that, in fact, he was a Ghostbuster. And it's just a very cute movie. I liked it. It was a little slow, a little long. Paul Rudd is in it. And at the beginning of the movie, when we saw the screening, the person who directed it said, oh, don't give away any spoilers. Don't tell people what happens in the last scenes. But I've seen all over TV that the three surviving ghosts.
Don't give a spoiler away, Debbie.
All right, I won't give it away, but I'll just say that certain people have been making the rounds of late night TV shows telling what happens, and I was kind of surprised by that. They kind of spoiled it.
Interesting.
But I did enjoy it.
It's worth seeing.
It's worth seeing. It's just a little slow moving, but I enjoyed it, and I thought it was cute. And I liked the kids. They were cute.
Is there any surreptitious political agenda that they're trying to sneak into the film? Are the ghosts...
No, and that is...
The ghosts aren't metaphors for, like, Black Lives Matter activists or something.
No, not that I saw. That's one of the things I liked about it all. So there's no politics in it. And I like when Hollywood realizes or occasionally returns to the days of old where we could just see a movie without being fed an agenda. This was one of those movies.
Julia, what's this film about?
So this is a documentary about the late chef Julia Child. And I know a lot about Julia Child because I've seen several movies about her already. And even though there was a lot in this movie I already knew, there was a lot I learned, and I thought it was very interesting. It's a very well-done documentary. And a couple interesting things that I learned about her was that I didn't like was that she was a big Democrat, raised money for Democrat politicians, and was very big on Planned Parenthood and abortions, and thought that abortions and sex education should be very available to very young kids. And unfortunately, I think she has gotten her wish. That said, I just thought it was a very amazing documentary. Oh, and also, she hated Republicans because her estranged father was one. She came from a very wealthy family, and he didn't like that she married somebody that was essentially a commoner who everybody thought was gay. I learned that she was 6'3". You know, she really was the pioneer of all these chefs we see on TV now. She started it all. She was the first one. And it just was super interesting, her life and how she built this career. She never cooked until she was in her 50s. I never knew that. It's a really, really cool film, very fun. And it's nice and short. It's under an hour and a half, which is the ideal time for me.
All right. Do you cook, Debbie?
I do when I have time, yes.
What's your specialty?
Nothing very fancy. It's probably the same specialty as anybody who can or cannot cook, which is I like scrambled eggs or a nice veggie omelet.
See, that's my specialty as well, scrambled eggs. I'm a master. King Richard, what's the story with this film? What's King Richard about? I'm imagining it's about King Richard.
It is about, not King Richard, it's about Richard Williams, the father of Venus and Serena Williams, the tennis champions. I did not care for this film, and I'll tell you why. Because I think it's really a fictional account of who this guy is, who he was, and also of the state of blacks in tennis. Now, I grew up playing competitive juniors tennis, and I am 10 years older, at least, than Serena Williams. And to watch this movie, you would think that no black people ever played pro or competitive juniors tennis. And that's just fiction. When I was playing tennis, there were already a lot of black kids playing tennis. There was a very, very heavy affirmative action and minority outreach part of tennis. They had a lot of tournaments in very bad neighborhoods of Detroit that I used to go to that they did just to promote tennis for black children. They had lots of scholarships. So this movie makes you think that there were never any major tennis, black tennis players or junior players. And I think it does a disservice to the people who really paved the way, who are not Venus and Serena. I think back to Althea Gibson, who was the first black woman to win Wimbledon, who was an American from the South, and her doubles partner, they were the world top players. And her doubles partner was this woman named Angela Buxton, who was a Jewish-British woman, and both of them could not play at a lot of clubs in the United States because it was for whites only, Gentiles only. That would have been a very interesting movie. Richard Williams is a racist. They did not show that in this movie. When Venus and Serena were coming up in the pros, they did not get the contracts because they were not attractive. They were not nice. They were braggers. They were not modest. This movie makes it look like he was big on modesty. They constantly brag about themselves to this day. They say they're the greatest tennis players, male or female. And Serena Williams could not beat the 1,000th best men's player when she was number one, which she is no longer. The other thing was, so he would constantly attack Anna Kournikova, Richard Williams, because she was beautiful. She was in the top 10 at the time, and she was getting all the contracts because of the way she looked, because at that time, tennis was about looks and showbiz. It really wasn't, on the women's side, about skill. That has changed a lot. But he was saying, oh, they just like her because she's white and everyone's racist against my daughters. This movie makes it look like he wasn't like that. It also makes it look like a lot of famous white people in the tennis establishment were racist against blacks and didn't want them to become pro players and didn't believe in them. And again, like I said, when I was playing juniors, that was already not the case.
Debbie, this is not racist at all, but we are out of time, so we're going to have to end it there. Let's talk again soon, all right?
All right.
Have a great weekend and a good Thanksgiving.
You too. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Thank you. Debbie Schlussel. You can check out her blog at DebbieDoesPolitics.com or DebbieSchlussel.com.